to Volcano Watch.
This is a weekly podcast to update you on the volcanic activity of the week. I'm one of your hosts, Alessandro Musu.
And I'm your other host, Corinne Jorgensen. We're PhD students at the University of Geneva.
We study volcanoes and are here to give you all the hot news about volcanoes.
First, a quick update on some of the week's volcanic activity.
And this week, instead of the focus, we have a cool volcanic story.
Let's get to it. It's April 26th at the time of recording, and this is your volcano news.
If we start in Asia, we had some of the regular plumes from Sakurajima in Japan, Suanosojima in Japan as well, and then we have Hibu in Halmahera, Indonesia, Sinabung and Semeru in East Java, Indonesia as well, then Hibiko in Paramushi Highland and Lowotolok in Indonesia, and also Dukono as well. This week has near Kosan Tashi Mission, and there is currently a 2 kilometer exclusion zone from the main crater.
Merapi in Indonesia has been very busy this year, and this week has been no different. The lava dome has been steadily growing at a rate of 12,200 cubic meters per day, with a glowing avalanches from the actively growing lava dome. There are concerns of ash plumes and avalanches turning into pyroclastic flows, and so the public is warned to stay at least 5 kilometers away from the summit. No news from Taal in the Philippines this week, but we're still keeping our eyes peeled.
Yeah, we definitely should keep our eyes open on Taal in Philippines, but we also have a new exciting news from Italy. Indeed, Mount Etna did a little fart today. A little small ash plume. She actually did a little bit more since the time of recording, the 26th of April. In total, there were 2 main explosive events and some smaller ash plumes. And moreover, since the 26th evening, Etna starts a mild explosive strombolian activity that is still continue, and the tremor looks to remain high for the moment, but never reaching the peak typical of beginning of a paroxysmal lava fountain activity. And we also have no major changes from La Réunion this week. But we have some news from Colombo in Greece that had a 4.0 magnitude earthquake this week, April 20th. And Colombo is an underwater volcano 8 kilometers northeast of the beautiful island of Santorini. And the earthquake was felt by the people on the island, but no eruption for the moment.
In Iceland, the activity has calmed down significantly in this past week. Though the eruption is not completely over, and you can still see on webcams there's some lava leaking out of several of the fissures. But it's certainly less spectacular, and the tourists seem to think so too. The Icelandic University put out a report of their activity since March 29th, with an average flow rate, area, and volume change with time, some gas and some chemistry changes with time as well. It's pretty interesting, and you can check it out on the Icelandic Meteorological Office's website.
Thank you, Corinne. Now let's move fastly in Americas. We have in Alaska, Simi Pokonoi was playing tricks on the Alaskan Volcano Observatory this week. After the weekend's eruption, things seems to calm down, and the AEVO changes the alert level from orange to yellow, only for the volcano to erupt the next day with a 3 kilometer tall plume, and so the ash advisory is back to orange again.
In the Central and South Americas, we had several ash plumes as per usual. Alessandro, do you want to guess who won the tallest plume of the week?
I don't know, yeah. Let me guess. Maybe Sabancaya?
No, it is La Soufre Saint Vincent, coming in with a 9.1 kilometer tall plume on April 22nd. La Soufre Saint Vincent has seemed to calm down this week as well, with a longer pauses in between eruptions. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's done with the show. We also saw plumes from Popocatépetl, Fuego, Nevada de Ruiz, Sabancaya, who almost beat St. Vincent with an 8.2 kilometer plume.
Sorry for him. He tried so hard.
and Reventador. We should also note that Sangay is still erupting with lava flows on the southeastern slope in some lahars. Remember this mud ash flow, which were mobilized this week by heavy rainfalls on the fresh ash.
And that's it for the quick update today. We recommend you to check our main sources, volcanodiscovery.com and the Smithsonian Global Volcanoes Project for more information.
Okay, so there's no volcanic focus really this week.
Yeah, we do prefer to relax a little bit because life can be a tiny little bit stressful sometimes.
We're both at a conference this week.
Yeah, so we are going to exchange the focus with a fun fact about volcanoes.
And if this is something people are enjoying, maybe we'll repeat this.
Maybe, why not? Guys, give us back some feedback that can be something like, cool, I really want to have more funny or interesting story about volcanoes. Or maybe something like, what the heck is that? Give me back my scientific focuses on volcanoes.
Okay, Alessandro, let's start with the story. So tell me, what is your story for today?
You know about the screen painting of Edvard Munch's volcano story?
What? Okay, I know this painting, but I didn't know that there's a volcanic story behind it.
Do you know the story already? Because I told you, but, well, this is probably one of the most famous stories between volcanologists. Everyone know the scream that is probably one of the most famous painting of Edvard Munch.
Yeah, I know this painting well. It's, you know, every painter has an iconic painting, and I would say this is probably Edvard Munch's iconic painting.
Yeah, you are right, like the Mona Lisa for Da Vinci or the lava fountain for Mama Etna.
Okay, Alessandro, Mama Etna is not a person and lava fountains are not paintings, but please continue.
Okay, well, everyone have painting in mind the image of the scream of Munch, you know, the anguish in the face of the screamer with a completely open mouth and both hands on the face and the wooden bridge and the intense scarlet sky above him. Well, this painting is one of the most iconic examples of how science and art sometimes can meet together. And in that case, the lesson is understanding what is happening on our planet on a larger scale can be useful also to better interpret and understand the art and the artist's feeling that inspire the artistic production. So let's start from the beginning. In May 1883, at the end of August, the Krakatoa volcano in Philippines produced one of the most violent and deadliest eruption occurred in the modern history. Nearly 40,000 people in the nearby island were killed. And this is sadly a very, very huge number.
Yeah, that's a lot of people.
Yeah, but the effect produced by such large eruption does not affect only the close surrounding area. The effect can reach the entire globe, and this is definitely the case. Reports from people hearing the eruption extending to 5,000 kilometers away from the Krakatoa event. That's
5,000 kilometers?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Atish Bhatia reports in the scientific magazine Nautilus that the sound of this eruption has potentially been the loudest noise the Earth has ever made.
Wow.
That's impressive. So the really high amount of debris and ashes and gases injected into the atmosphere by this eruption caused mesmerizing changes in the sky colors and very spectacular sunsets that for entire months were seen around the entire planet. Also, the New York Times reported in November of the same year changes in the horizon color, with sky turned to brilliant scarlet and clouds slowly start to look bloody tinted in New York City. Munch in the same years realized different paintings in Oslo, and more than one present a very scarlet sky. Munch itself in this diary, talking about the scream, says that he was walking along the road with some friends and then he saw a very intense sunset with blood red sky and clouds looking like thongs of fire, and that makes him feel melancholy and overcome. So several scientists started to advance the theory that the colors of the painting was actually inspired by one of these unusual skies produced by this large eruption that Munch probably managed to see from Oslo. The scream was not the only paint that presented this features Other examples are The Spire and Angst, other two paintings that present this very red sky of Edvard Munch.
Cool.
In the years, many articles and many other proofs of this theory were reported on this thesis. And to directly cite John Ravenel, that is actually the curator of the Virginia Museum of Fine Arts in Richmond, Virginia, USA, he says that the scientific research adds interesting layers to the painting interpretation. And we are totally agree with him. Maybe when we are watching the sky after an eruption in Catania or in Stromboli, who knows, I really hope to, we can be touched by different feeling, and maybe looking again at the Munch's scream afterwards, we can understand a little bit more about the feelings represented by the artist, and maybe we will manage to go deeper in the artist's mind, and at the same time the painting can go deeper inside us as well, bringing to the surface emotion buried in our hearts.
Oh, wow, Alessandro, that was really beautiful. Also, really cool. It's like, this is something I didn't know. I had no idea that that's why the sky was red. I always just thought it was because, you know, that was the emotions. But it's cool. It's really cool to know that that's influenced by real life and influenced by volcanoes. Super cool. Wow, thanks so much for that story, Alessandro. I enjoyed it, and I hope the listeners did too.
I hope you too.
Yeah.
And I think that is all for the today episode.
Yeah.
So thank you very much to spend some time with us. And that's it. See you next week.
And you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram and Spotify, I guess, and Apple Music. I don't know. You guys know.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Have a good week. Bye.